Support for the Exchange Podcast from NHPR comes from you, our listeners,
and from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own-farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Today, some positive environmental news. The latest bald eagle count shows their populations thriving in New Hampshire. That was not the case back in the 1960s, when this bird that has long symbolized America was so decimated it received federal protection. 50 years later, though, in 2007, its numbers had rebounded to the point where it was removed from the endangered species list. And in the Northeast, the recovery has been especially strong. Today in The Exchange, a New Hampshire window on this national story, including how the eagle's success has affected other parts of our ecosystem. Let's hear from you. Your questions and observations are welcome. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We have two guests for the hour. Ian McLeod is here, Executive Director at the Squam Lakes Natural Science Center. Ian, welcome back. Nice to see you.
Great to be here, Laura.
Also with us, Chris Martin, Senior Biologist at New Hampshire Audubon and co-host of Something Wild Heard here on NHPR. And Chris, good to see you too. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Laura.
Well, both of you, will get into the numbers in just a moment, the count, what people saw and where. But to you first, I think, Ian, what's behind this comeback to the point where eagles were taken off the endangered species list about a decade ago?
Well, a lot of management by a lot of people. A lot of different agencies have worked very hard to bring bald eagles back. There were very active restoration programs in Massachusetts, hacking eagles back into the wild so that the populations could recover. And we've really benefited from that over the years. We've seen quite a few bald eagles from Massachusetts that have come over the state line. We always joke that it's the tax system that encourages them. But, of course, we've got great habitat for eagles here, lots of fish, lots of trees. And everything just seems to be working out for eagles right now. There's, you know, the waters are clean. There's lots of things to eat. There's plenty of trees to nest in. And that we've just seen a really dramatic increase in the last 30 years or so in the state.
Well, I like the way you put it, hacking eagles back into the environment. Is that what you said? What does that mean, really?
Well, it's a term basically where you take young birds and you bring them back to the wild. You put them out into the wild in very carefully controlled situations. So they're put into what are called hacking boxes, which are essentially like a man-made nest structure. They're tended until they're ready to fly, and then they fly by themselves once they've reached a mature stage. So it's a way to control, to bring them back to a particular location. Quabbin Reservoir was a particular spot in Massachusetts that they were released. I don't think there was ever an active hacking program in New Hampshire, but certainly Massachusetts did a lot of very deliberate, you know, bringing back of bald eagles to try to get the population recovered.
Well, and we'll talk in a moment about what great habitat there is for eagles here in New Hampshire. They love rivers, and we've got lots of those. But what about DDT, Chris? That's another huge factor here responsible for the eagles' rebound.
Well, DDT was a real culprit in the decline of the birds to begin with, and it was insidious because we didn't realize that the eagles weren't reproducing young for decades, actually. We didn't realize that. And so by the 1960s, there were no young eagles. All the adult eagles had aged to the point where they were dying of old age, but there were no young birds to replace them in the nesting cycle. So that chemical was banned for use in the United States in the 1970s. And it was at that point, that was the inflection point, where we started to see, instead of a decline in the population all over the country, we started to see birds successfully raising young again. It took a while, but all the eagles we have today, the fact we have a large population, it's the result of eagles doing what they do, which is reproduce. And we took away the factors that were creating a population sink, if you will.
Well, the DDT, correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, it made the shells thin, right? So they could, the eggs were being created, but then the shells were too thin to protect the growing.
Yeah, the situation was they were so fragile and thin-shelled that the act of incubating them and turning them, which has to happen for the embryos to develop, that was causing eggs to break. And I don't think it was killing embryos directly by the high concentration of the chemical, but it was interfering with their ability to hatch eggs. And so we didn't have any baby eagles or one-year-olds or two-year-olds or beyond that.
When we say eagle in New Hampshire, Ian, by the way, we're talking about bald eagles, right?
Correct, yes. So we have two species of eagles in North America, the bald eagle and the golden eagle. Actually, not that closely related, interestingly, even though they're both called eagles. The bald eagle is part of a group that are known as sea eagles or fish eagles, and then the golden eagle is actually what are called Aquila eagles or true eagles. So the golden eagle is actually more closely related to the imperial eagle in Europe or the wedge-tailed eagle in Australia, more closely related to them than it is to the bald eagle. So similar in their size, but very different in habits. We have lots of bald eagles here in New Hampshire. We have very few golden eagles. We see golden eagles migrating through here in the fall, generally, late October, November time. And these are birds that are breeding up in Newfoundland, Labrador, places like that, the Canadian Maritimes. There's a small breeding population. And so they migrate through and they're heading down to the Carolinas. Having said that, we do have at least one in the state right now.
I saw that. Yeah, it must be kind of lonely.
Westmoreland, which is kind of an interesting, a lot of birders are going to see it. It's been fairly regular, which is sort of unusual. We get occasional sightings in the winter, but this one seems to be pretty regular over the last couple of weeks. But generally in the fall is when we see them passing through. There is a wintering population down in Pennsylvania and the Carolinas, Virginia.
So mostly a Canadian eagle, but comes down to the U.S. every once in a while?
Well, they're found throughout North America. We just don't have a breeding population in New England. I think the last time golden eagles possibly nested in the state in New Hampshire was the 70s, I think.
Go ahead, Chris.
1960s, probably 1960s. Up in the Dartmouth College grant. But golden eagles are actually a common bird in the western United States, in the mountains. Golden eagles are a mountain bird that is a terrestrial animal for the large part. Bald eagles, like Ian said, are a sea eagle. Their focus is on aquatic systems. And so you see them nesting near water, whereas you see there's a cliff in Franconia Notch called Eagle Cliff. That's not named for bald eagles. It's named for the fact that in the 1800s, there were golden eagles nesting there.
That's really interesting. Yeah. All right, so we're going to talk mostly, in fact, almost entirely about bald eagles, because that's what we've got here in New Hampshire, with the exception of this lonely-sounding eagle in Westmoreland. But just because we have it, I do have a clip of what a golden eagle sounds like. So if you hear it, maybe it's a golden eagle. Let's hear. Okay, so that's a golden eagle, and as we just learned, that's not really what we have here in New Hampshire. Go ahead, Chris.
Ian, when's the last time you heard that?
They are very silent birds. You don't hear golden eagles making a lot of vocalizations, certainly around the nest occasionally. But that's one of the interesting differences, is that bald eagles are very vocal, and I'm sure you have a call of a bald eagle, and they make a lot of noise year-round.
Well, I'm so glad you asked, because, of course, this is radio, so we do have a clip of what a bald eagle sounds like. And I have to say, we saw it described on YouTube as, if a squeaky supermarket cart and a seagull somehow made babies, it would sound like a bald eagle. That is not what I thought bald eagles sounded like. Let's hear what a real bald eagle sounds like. Okay, it does sound like a squeaky supermarket cart.
Yeah. They're very vocal. In fact, I heard one yesterday. I was out in the field in the Lakes region looking at eagles, and there was one calling yesterday. So year-round, every month of the year, you can hear bald eagles making sounds like that. And you're probably going to mention the thing that you probably thought it sounded like is actually the red-tailed hawk. So every commercial on television uses the sound of a red-tailed hawk. We think that there should be a royalty paid to conservation organizations for the misuse of the red-tailed hawk call, because every flying creature has that characteristic hawk call. And so you'll see on movie sets, on commercials, they've got a bald eagle flying, or it could be a fruit bat. It doesn't matter. They'll play the red-tailed hawk call.
Yeah, that really is kind of unfair. And, you know, I'm thinking of like a commercial for a big, you know, truck or something.
Oh, yeah.
And,
Jeep,
you know,
Jeep
very
truck.
American.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
and
yeah,
you got the eagle soaring over the mountains. Yeah. And you probably hear something like this in the commercial. So this is what people think eagles sound like. Okay, Okay, so I have to say, Chris, I kind of fell into that trap too. And when our producer, Jessica Hunt, who put together today's show, played that other clip of what a real bald eagle sounds like, I thought, that's kind of wimpy.
Well, it is what it is. These birds are these birds are at the top of the food web. They have almost no natural enemies other than people putting bad stuff in the environment that they consume. So it really, in a way, doesn't matter what they sound like, because what matters is that they're in charge of pretty much everything else that goes on in the food web.
Again, our number here in the exchange for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Karen sent us an email. She says, I've been watching this DC Eagle cam for a few years. The webcams have been down due to the shutdown, but there is a lot of information and archive material available. Karen says, it features the nest of bald eagles known as Mr. President and the First Lady, a mated pair living in the most idyllic of nest sites within Washington, D.C., high in a tulip poplar tree amongst the azalea collection at the National Arboretum. We'll put the web address, if you want to look at that webcam, on our website here on the exchange, nhpr.org/exchange. But what about these webcams, Chris? It is a really fun way to keep up with the eagles.
Well, there are webcams now for almost every species of mammal and bird. They're complicated to set up, but they sure get a large following. We don't have any webcams on bald eagles in New Hampshire, but there are plenty you can choose from just by going online and Googling that. We have a peregrine falcon webcam in Manchester that's been going for more than 10 years.
I didn't realize that there were eagles as far south as D.C. I think of them as more northern birds, but I guess I'm
wrong. No, they're not. There's an eagle population in the U.S. that nests in Florida that doesn't migrate, that's there year-round, and actually they have babies now because this is the appropriate time weather-wise to raise young in Florida. But there's lots of interaction between eagle populations. Young eagles from Florida will actually migrate to New Hampshire during our summer, and you can't tell a fledged juvenile eagle in New Hampshire from one from Florida.
Okay. Well, Karen, thank you again for that email. You can send us an email as well, your observations and questions about New Hampshire's rebounding bald eagle population. 1-800-892-6477 is the number. Email exchange@nhpr.org. So, guys, I definitely want to get into the latest numbers, the eagle count, what it tells us, what it doesn't tell us. But before we do that, Ian, why do you think eagles are cool? I mean, we have a lot of impressive raptors in this state. We heard that red-tailed hawk cry, which has, you know, is so impressive it's even used to imitate an eagle. What makes eagles special?
Well, they're big. They're charismatic. They're quite obvious. They're relatively easy to see. That white head and tail makes them look kind of regal. You know, that sort of nice white gleaming head. You can literally, when we're looking for eagles, scanning for them, we'll look for what we call the white tennis ball. You're just kind of looking for that glowing head sitting against a green tree, maybe on the far side of a lake. So they're quite obvious. They build a big nest. It's very impressive to see eagles around a nest. When they catch their prey, it can be quite spectacular. They drop down, you know, next to a boat and grab a fish right next to you on the lake. They're also very adaptable, surprisingly so. When eagles first started nesting again in the state, we were very concerned about the nest site that they chose up in Leonard Pond on Lake Umbagog back in 1988. We thought, oh my goodness, they'll never be successful there. We have to give them an alternative site because they'll be so, you know, afraid of the boats and the fishermen. And of course, now we have literally bald eagles nesting in people's backyards in the lakes region. I mean,
isn't that amazing?
They're incredibly adaptable. I mean, they'll just sit and watch a boat go by. People are out ice fishing. There'll be an eagle sitting on the tree just waiting for the ice fishermen to leave, and they'll come down and grab a snack, you know, of a bait fish that's been left, or a hot dog, or whatever it might be. They're very, very adaptable. And so they've learned how to cope with, you know, 21st century activity and humans. And, you know, so they're regularly seen. And they're just magnificent. I mean, to see one flying by, if you're on a mountaintop and you know, looking at hawk migration in the fall, and this spectacular eagle just sort of glides by on its way south, it's something you'll remember for a long, long time.
They are big. I was looking at some of the numbers yesterday, Chris, weighing just 10 to 14 pounds, so not that big, about the weight of a house cat, but with a wingspan from 72 to 90 inches. That is enormous.
Yeah, the males are smaller than females. If you see two eagles perched together, adult eagles, They're probably a mated pair, and the big one is the female. 6 foot wingspan, that's pretty typical. The females are on the heavy side. They're more like the 12 to 14 pounders. The males are lighter, 9 to 11 pounds. Clear size difference that you can see visually in most cases.
How can something that big weigh so little, Chris?
Well, they have hollow bones. Most of what you see is feathers and down.
Which is light.
If you were to strip an eagle down, it would look pretty much like a turkey in the grocery store if you took all its feathers off. They're built for flight, so they are adapted for thousands and thousands of years to be as lightweight as possible.
They do cool things, Ian, like swim. I had no idea.
Only if they have to. They don't choose to swim. So Chris and I have both seen it where an eagle has grabbed a fish that's maybe a little bit bigger than it anticipated. And sometimes they'll hold on to that fish. They'll be determined if they can't get out of the water by flying, they'll actually swim to shore and haul the fish out. So I've seen that a couple of times. And they're really quite good at it. They kind of do the breaststroke and they just sort of work their way to shore. They wouldn't do it for a long, long distance. But if they're close in a cove and they can see the shoreline, they'll swim. And within a few minutes, they'll get to shore. They'll be wet and bedraggled and they'll sit there looking pathetic for a while and dry off. But then they'll eat their fish that they've hung on to. So it's a lot of hard work to catch a fish and you don't let it go.
Yeah, and that's their preferred meal. So
it is. I mean,
they got to work for it sometimes.
They are, as I say, adaptable, and they will eat a lot of different things. They're not exclusively fish eaters, unlike their cousin, the osprey, which is 100% fish eating diet. But they certainly do eat a lot of fish in the aquatic habitats that we have, and that's very important for them.
Go ahead, Chris.
But eagles, besides eating fish, which everyone associates bald eagles with as being fish eaters, especially in the winter months, they take the place of turkey vultures that mostly leave the state in that they eat carrion. They eat dead items, roadkill, farm animals that have died, animals that just die in the woods of old age. Bald eagles are excellent scavengers. In fact, they end up, along with coyotes, opening up large animal carcasses like deer carcasses that allows a whole suite of other smaller animals like chickadees, blue jays, gray jays, mink, things like that. Weasels to feed because they're the ones that open the carcass up to begin with.
Okay, and not to get too gross because it's still in the morning, but basically if a large animal dies in the woods, the eagle will take the first bite, so to speak, and that opens up the opportunity for smaller creatures.
Right. They are the ultimate generalists. They eat fish. They eat mammals. I've seen them try to open up a turtle and eat it.
Wow.
Yeah, not easy. And all forms of carrion.
And trash? Ian, some people think they're trash pickers, which kind of downgrades that majestic image.
Yeah, but they're looking for things that people have thrown away that they can eat. I mean, maybe, chicken carcass or bits and pieces like that. And they will, any meat they will eat. They're not sort of an omnivore. They're definitely a meat eater. But we'll quite often see eagles out on the ice with a deer. Deer occasionally will head out in the ice and if it's slippy, or maybe they've been chased out there in the night by a pack of coyotes, then unfortunately a deer might break a leg and end up on the ice. And so we'll often see a carcass, and eagles will use that for many, many days. And sometimes multiple eagles will find a carcass out on the ice, and that's a great, great resource. And at night, probably bobcats and coyotes are coming in to feed on it as well. But during the day, the eagles are getting a great meal of that deer.
And did they get a great meal this fall, Chris, with all the dead squirrels on the road? Remember Squirrelmageddon?
Well, that's a risk we should talk about is roadkill of eagles as a result of feeding near the road. That's definitely a danger.
Okay, we will check out that after a short break, and we'll keep taking your questions and comments. Send us an email if you'd like. exchange@nhpr.org. Coming up after the break, got a couple emails, questions for you guys, observations. You can give us a call too, 1-800-892-6477. More on New Hampshire's Eagle Rebound in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, New Hampshire's eagle population. It's rebounded in the past 25 or 30 years. We're finding out more and what that tells us. Also, we're learning a little bit about eagle habits and habitat For example, did you know that eagles can swim if they have to? Let's get your questions, your observations in. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Chris Martin is here, senior biologist at the New Hampshire Audubon, co-host of Something Wild, heard here on NHPR, along with Ian McLeod, executive director at the Squam Lakes Natural Science Center. And both of you, lots of emails coming in from our listeners. Scott from Rye just called from the road between Dover and Exeter. He says he just saw a bald eagle soaring near Newfield, so there you go. They're out there as we're talking. Maybe they're listening somehow. I'm not sure.
They're everywhere. They're nesting in Pittsburgh, New Hampshire. They're nesting in Hinsdale, New Hampshire, down by the Massachusetts line. They're nesting in Newcastle, which is about as far out, other than the Isle of Shoals, as you can go in the southeast to the ocean.
Well, and I really appreciate the email. And this gets us to the numbers that we should dig into, guys. So as we've learned, New Hampshire's 39th annual Midwinter Eagle Survey is just out recently. It tells us how eagles are faring in New Hampshire since that decline back in the, you know, 40s, 50s, and 60s. So both of you, but you first, I think, Chris. So what do these latest numbers tell us?
Well, the latest numbers tell us that there's a long-term trend of population recovery continuing that goes back to the early 1980s. If you were to look at the graphs that we have of our midwinter eagle count, you'll see that we're up in around 84 or 85 bald eagles counted in the one-day survey. Now, that doesn't mean there's only 85 of them out there in the state, but we'd use the same methods year after year now for almost 40 years, and our population has gone from 2 to 4 to 7 eagles in the 1980s to now nearly 100. I keep thinking this is the year we're going to hit 100. That's the midwinter survey, but we also do a breeding season survey where we count the number of adults at nests, the number of chicks they produce each year. And of course, you have to remember, there's at least twice that many young eagles that haven't reached breeding age, one-year-olds, two-year-olds, three-year-olds, even four-year-olds, that are not part of the breeding population. We're talking about 200 adult eagles and their young, plus another 200 or 300 young eagles. There's 500 eagles, bald eagles in the state.
Yeah, it's amazing. And what does this count not tell us, though, Ian? I mean, you know, Chris is right. It's not a science, but at least we're using the same number year after year.
Well, I mean, what's great about it is, you know, that systematic count from year to year. It's a way of getting a snapshot of what's going on a particular day. So we do our particular count in the Lakes region on a Thursday, and then up in the rest of the state is on the Saturday. So, you know, a lot can happen. Sometimes we'll miss a bird at a particular location and they're not there. We'll go back a couple of days later and they're there. So we're not going to see every bird. But what it shows us is that we've just had this amazing steady progression over the last 30 years. And it looks like it's going to go on and on and on. I don't know what the sort of upper limit is for the winter count or for the breeding population. Right now, it looks like it's certainly not limitless, but at some point they're going to reach a saturation point. But I think we've got a long way to go in the state. So it's all very, very positive.
Well, if you were to look at a graphic showing the time sequence of this population recovery, it looks like the sky's the limit, like this population is just going to go up and up and up. We're going to reach an inflection point at some point where our population, its growth rate slows down. And eventually, in theory, we reach a stable population that's in balance with the other animals that are out there, with the prey species, with the available habitat, the places to nest. But at this point, we're at a point in the population growth where it's unclear where that plateau is going to be.
We're not there yet. Yeah,
and I want to let
listeners know a little bit later, we will focus in on one aspect of this conversation, that is how this rebound in eagles is affecting other species within our ecosystem, because as you guys have said, eagles are at the top of the food chain and they do like to pick on other people or other creatures. So we will definitely cover that. In fact, we've got an email to that effect from Scott, who says, in regards to eagles swimming, several years ago, Scott says, I witnessed a pair of bald eagles knock a great blue heron out of the air, then take turns swimming it to shore. This was at the headwaters of the Androscoggin River. It struck me as a pretty unique scene and I felt privileged to witness it. Wow, Scott, I have never even heard of anything like that. That's amazing. Ian?
That's an amazing thing to see. Yeah, I've never heard of them. I've never seen them taking down a great blue heron, but they'll take big birds. I've seen them chasing Canada geese. Obviously, we've got a lot of Canada geese in the state. Probably a lot of people who don't like Canada geese will be delighted to hear that, that bald eagles will happily go after Canada geese. So they use different methods. Sometimes they'll work as a pair. I've seen two eagles sort of work together, probably a mated pair, sort of coordinating their efforts like this fellow saw with the great blue heron. Also this year, I had to just sort of pick up on the point just when we went to the break, talking about the gray squirrels. We had, of course, those incredible numbers of gray squirrels. And I had what I thought was an amazing sighting when, out on Squam Lake, late September, early October, on one of the Science Center cruises. We had one of the adult eagles. We have a nesting pair on Squam, zipped over the top of the boat, swooped down, and on the third swoop, grabbed something out of the water. I took a photograph of it. I assumed it was a fish or something dead.
That's the classic.
And when I looked at the photograph, it was a gray squirrel that was swimming across the lake. And
we had
a lot of reports of gray squirrels doing that this year. Not that we want to get into this whole squirrel-mageddon, whatever we called it, but this incredible overabundance that we had of gray squirrels this year. They were desperately looking for habitat, swimming across rivers, swimming across lakes, ponds. We had so many sightings. And I'm sure that bald eagles were just sitting on the edge of their lakes watching for the next gray squirrel, making an attempt to get out to a particular island and picking them off, because they would have been very, very easy picking. So eagles would certainly hone in on that vast food supply that was suddenly abundant this fall.
That's really interesting. And I also saw a gray squirrel swimming across the Merrimack River this fall and couldn't believe it. Never seen anything like it. But you're right. It seems great for the eagles, Chris, right? I mean, a gray squirrel swimming across the river is a lot easier to catch than a fish.
Yeah. I have today's word of the day, kleptoparasitism. Ever heard of that?
No.
What that means is stealing food from others, basically. And bald eagles are experts at kleptoparasitism. What Ian was talking about with that great blue heron might have been an instance of that. Herons carry their food inside their gullet, inside their throat. And an eagle will harass a great blue heron, which is heavily laden with food, on its way back to its nest. It will harass that heron oftentimes until they literally throw up the food. Isn't that lovely?
Wow, that's amazing, though.
And then the eagle doesn't care about the heron anymore. It cares about the bass that was inside the heron. They also do the same thing. They'll let ospreys catch fish for them. And then while the osprey's heading back to its nest, they'll chase the osprey. And eventually the calculation is, I better drop this fish or I'm not going to make it back to my nest ever again.
And wow, they're kind of bullies, aren't they?
Kleptoparasitism.
Stealing people's, cookies in the lunchroom.
Just one more strategy that they use. They use so many different strategies to get food.
Pirates. Yeah, my good friend, my colleague, Rob Beauregard, who I do a lot of work with, calls eagles birds of low moral character. He's not a big fan of the bald eagle because of some of these habits. He tells a great story, and it's a true story, about a pair of bald eagles that nests out on some offshore islands off the coast of California. And there's a very large colony of cormorants that nest on this island. And this pair of bald eagles, all they feed on, and this is not great, for early morning listening, but is cormorant vomit. Basically, their tactic is to fly through the colony of cormorants, scare the cormorants so that they throw up, and then they come down and grab the fish and regurgitated whatever that the cormorants have. And that's all this pair of eagles. And they're special, and they do very well. They raise chicks every year purely on cormorant vomit. There's a good story for the listeners.
I think we're done here.
Wow. Okay.
Adaptable.
Well, and that answers our listener's email, which I thought was amazing and I never heard of before. Two eagles harassing a heron. That's why. They were basically, schoolroom bullies bullying some other kid for his lunch money.
However, they would eat the heron if they got the chance, and they will go to heron nesting colonies and pick off the chicks that can't fly.
Well, it's fascinating. And here's an email from David who says, eagles can be and are often nasty animals. We have a cabin on an ocean bay in Maine where we watch eagles regularly feed by stealing. They steal from ospreys, they steal from seagulls, they swipe ducklings and any other small young they can find. There's a nastiness to their behaviors that other birds just don't seem to share, David says. He says, we have watched seagulls join forces to harass malingering eagles, dive bombing and attacking them from the ground and eventually driving them off. Benjamin Franklin, David says, I believe, frowned on the choice of an eagle as a national symbol, describing it as a rank coward. He preferred the turkey for its bravery and its convivial nature. David, thank you so much. I knew that Benjamin Franklin wanted the turkey. I had forgotten why he thought it was such a great symbol, but certainly we have a lot of them. What a wonderful email. Thank you so much, David. What do you think, Chris?
I don't know. The one person's nasty is another person's effective, okay? And a woodpecker pulling a grub out of a tree is doing just the same thing as an eagle is doing. Somehow it's more acceptable to us.
Do you want to jump in on the turkey versus eagle, yes. Ian, or are you just not going to go there? That's too political.
I wouldn't go. I mean, you know, the eagle has a lot of good things going for it as well. I mean, it is a very spectacular bird. It just does have it's adaptable. You know, it's that's the reason that it's being successful. It has a lot of different ways, a lot of different strategies that it can survive in different times of the year, and you've got to admire that. You know, it can nest in a lot of places because it's willing to eat and feed and parasitize and whatever it needs to do to survive. So I think there's some,
there's a scrappiness to it.
Yeah, there is, yeah.
Well, bald eagle's a good choice, too, because that's a native North American bird. There are not bald eagles in South America or Asia or Europe. It's a North American species, so it's a good choice.
Well, getting back to the count for a little bit, guys, and I'd love to hear from listeners on this next question. Where are you most likely to see an eagle? So you can send us an email about that. Other people have already told us where they saw eagles and what they saw them doing. We'd love to hear from you. Keep the emails coming, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. So, Chris, I was looking at some of the information and maps and so forth, and it does seem like New Hampshire's eagles love our rivers, love our lakes. That's where you're going to find
them. That's exactly right. And the one thing you missed there is the seacoast as well.
Okay, so don't think of them as coastal birds.
Our tidal water areas. What's astounding to me is to track the growth of the population that's breeding along our shared boundary with Vermont, which is the Connecticut River. At one point, we had pairs nesting about 15 miles apart on the Connecticut River. And then new pairs that were establishing would squeeze in between, so they were 7 or 8 miles apart. And then between those pairs, we'd get another pair. Now we've got pairs of eagles nesting less than 2 miles apart up and down the Connecticut River in many locations. It's basically a dotted line of bald eagle territories.
Yeah, I remember 20 years ago, Ian, seeing an eagle was a big deal on the Merrimack River, which is, you know, I live in Concord. So now it's not uncommon to see them. It's still really cool, though.
Yes, I mean, they're literally from north to south, east to west, and, you know, along our major rivers, the Lakes region, which is where I live and where the Science Center is, we've got a very healthy population of nesting eagles. So they're around the Big Lake, they're around Winnipesaukee, you'll see them on Newfound Lake, you'll see them up and down the Merrimack, any river, basically anywhere there's open water at this time of year, but also anywhere there's ice fishermen. We mentioned before that that adaptability, where there are ice houses, they'll often hang around there because they'll be able to get something to eat. And then, of course, the nesting sites, they're mostly on islands in the Lakes region, so little wooded islands. Almost every nest, in fact, every nest that we know of in the Lakes region is on a white pine. So any wooded island with a big white pine is a potential nesting site. But you can also see them right in Concord, right in Manchester. They're up and down the Merrimack. They're in larger cities. They're very, very adaptable. There's open water below the dam in Amiskeag. For many years, that was one of the best places in the state. Now that they've filled in, we're seeing them in a lot of other places as well. But a lot of the places we used to see them in the winter, they're now nesting. So those were, you know, birds that were prospecting in the winter months, and we're now seeing nest sites. I think there are now two, maybe three nests just within a few miles of where we're sitting right now here in Concord. So they're beginning to fill in all around the state, and really just, you know, anywhere on an open area of water, lake, river, tidal area, you have a chance of seeing a bald eagle.
And I think it might surprise listeners to realize that when you drive from Manchester to Nashua on 293 and the Everett Turnpike, you literally drive within 100 feet of a bald eagle nest that overlooks the interstate.
Well, that's one thing I wanted to ask you, Chris, looking at the map. Again, you know, people might think of eagles as, sure, you see them in the Lakes region, you see them in Umbagog, maybe the Connecticut River. But when you start talking about the Merrimack River, you know, down to Nashua and so forth, it's pretty urban. There are a lot of people. I mean, how disturbed are eagles by people and our habits?
They're
and
not.
Our
they're so adaptable. They take advantage of the opportunities that human populations provide.
Kind of like coyotes.
Whether that be roadkill or protection from other things that might want to attack them. The Merrimack River is still being colonized by nesting eagles. There's lots of potential still on that river.
Here's an email from Gail in Deerfield who says, in the past, I've seen winter eagles, in quotes, in the Dover-Rochester area. This year, I have not seen any. Has the winter population moved to another region? Gail, I'm glad you asked that question because I wanted to ask you guys, and I'll start with you, Ian, what the migrating habits are of eagles.
So we get kind of a little bit of everything. We have breeding eagles that are here year-round. We get an influx of eagles in the fall and into the winter that are coming from further north. So these are probably birds that are breeding way up in Arctic Canada, Newfoundland, places like that. And for this, this is south for them, where it's really severe winter months further north from here. So we do get an influx in the winter. All of our breeding pairs seem to stay here. We don't know of any, certainly all the pairs that I monitor, I see them every month of the year. They're close to their nesting territories. And of course, we have a lot of juveniles that are moving around, youngsters that are exploring and looking for new territories and looking for a place to spend the winter. And they'll often hang around in the winter months. The breeding pairs are more tolerant when they're not breeding of juveniles. And so you'll sometimes see gatherings. If there's a, I mentioned before about a deer carcass, you'll often see an adult pair on a carcass, and then a juvenile will fly in, and then another one, and you know they'll sort of congregate. It's almost like musical carcass, you know. Though as soon as the pair moves on, another one will move in. So they're here year round, and they're passing through in the fall as well.
Thanks for the email, Gail, and let's go to the phones. Ben is calling from Eaton. Hi, Ben. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hey there. I was calling because we have friends in Ossipee on Route 16 that own a fish hatchery. And I know that they're plagued by eagles taking their fish. What sort of options can they do to not have these eagles steal from their livelihood?
Wow, Ben, I can totally see that, especially after what I've learned from the two of you. What do you think, Chris?
Well, the state operates several fish hatcheries, and they take steps to keep the eagles from getting in the pools by putting awnings or covers over their pools and keep the really valuable fish from being taken by eagles. It's a strategy that has been used by other wildlife managers when there's a nest that needs to be protected. Certain species cover their nests with awnings as well.
Interesting. All right. Thank you for the call, Ben. And Bartlett sent us an email. Do eagles eat house cats or chickens? This is actually a great question, Bartlett. I was wondering that myself. Go ahead, Ian.
Opportunists.
A lot of people have chickens now in their backyards.
They would. I mean, they're more likely there are other raptors that will take chickens. You know, goshawks, red-tailed hawks have been known. You know, one of the colloquial names for a red-tailed hawk is the chicken hawk, and that's probably because it will occasionally take chickens. Eagles, again, will if they have a chance, a young eagle, an inexperienced eagle, if it's hungry enough and there are free-range chickens running around, they could certainly grab them. If the chicken is smart, it's going to outrun the eagle potentially, but it certainly does happen. In terms of house cats, it's possible. We've certainly we mentioned earlier the webcams. One of the webcams that runs 24/7 and you know was watching these nests. Some people were shocked. I think it was two or three years ago. One of the adult eagles brought a cat into the nest and started feeding it to the chicks. Now,
yikes.
Almost certainly this was roadkill. It looked a little flat, a little squished. So I'm guessing that it just took advantage of seeing this fresh dead cat on the road. A cat would be a handful for an eagle. An eagle's, you know, any bird, any animal, any predator is trying to find the easiest meal possible. So a cat would be kind of a handful. We do get people calling concerned about their little dog, you know, whether the eagle might take their dog. Again, very, very unlikely. You never say never. You know, if it's a tiny little puppy and it's out by itself in the middle of nowhere and, you know, out on the ice, an eagle would go, oh, what's this little thing? It looks tasty.
Yeah, but nobody's going to put their 5-pound dog out on the ice
it
there. So,
you know, it's pretty unlikely.
Well, and eagles, as we said earlier, only weigh 10 to 14 pounds themselves. So how much could they really, you know, lift a 10-pound
more than you think.
House cat?
Right.
Well, okay then. All right. A lot more of your questions and comments after a short break. We love these comments. Keep them coming in. We'll also hear how eagles have been harassing another beloved species here in New Hampshire. That's the loon. So that's coming up. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
Dedicated listener Joanne Harden of Rye has included NHPR in her will and trust.
It may not be the biggest trust, but I want to be able to pay back what I feel I've received so the people coming after me will be able to enjoy that.
Leaving a gift to NHPR is an inspired way to support an organization that has enriched your life and that of others in your community. To learn more about including NHPR in your estate plans, go to nhpr.giftplans.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, 2 years in, the impacts of the Trump presidency on New Hampshire, on our politics, our economy, our environment. That's tomorrow on The Exchange. This hour, New Hampshire's eagles. We're finding out about their habits, their habitat, and the story behind the eagles' rebound here in the Granite State. You can join us, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. We've gotten lots of great stories from listeners about their observations, eagles they've seen doing all sorts of things around the state. So again, you can keep those emails coming at exchange@nhpr.org. And Ian and Chris, let's go back to our listeners. Dick joins us from Newcastle. Hi, Dick. Go ahead. You're in the air. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. I just want my observation being out on Lake Winnipesaukee looking for eagles is that the best time I've found to see them is relatively early in the day, up high on a tree that has a good visibility of the water with the sun behind them. And that's sort of logical. I just wondered if that was common practice or just where I've happened to come across them.
Well, Dick, thanks for the call. What do you think, Chris?
Well, eagles are out and active all day long. I think what's going on there is that in the morning they're hungry because they usually don't feed at night. And oftentimes our lakes and other water bodies are quieter in the morning. The wind isn't blowing as strongly. There's not as many people out to disturb the eagles and displace them. It's very logical to see them at that point.
Do you want to jump in, Ian?
Yeah, I mean, they do have very particular favorite perches. You know, eagles get to know their territories really well. Sometimes they'll perch, where they're close to their nest, or they can keep an eye on the nest, or they can keep an eye on their mate. But they also will have particular places that they go to and sit because they've had success finding something to eat there in the past. So certainly there are regular perches that just lend themselves perfectly to an eagle just to sit. And so probably this gentleman, if he went back, he would find the eagles in the same place day after day after day, just waiting for the next meal to come along.
And when you have, let's say, one adult eagle perched on an island with a big, tall pine, there's a pretty good chance that that eagle is in eye contact with either its nest or its mate a lot of the time, even if that other bird is 2 miles away.
Well, gentlemen, I want to turn to a subject that has come up a lot in recent years when we talk about the resurgence of the eagles, and that's the impact on the beloved loon. Everybody in New Hampshire loves to see loons, loves to hear loons, and as you guys know, loons have been struggling. With us now for more on that is John Cooley. He's senior biologist with the Loon Preservation Committee. And John, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Laura. Good to be here.
Well, how do loons and eagles interact?
Loons are aware of eagles, and as Chris has described in our work on this subject, it's a sort of an age-old battle between eagles and loons. So if you're watching a loon on the lake or sitting on a nest in the summertime, a lot of times the first thing you know about an eagle being around is that the loon starts calling. And loons will respond to an eagle flying over them or across the other end of the lake in a way that they don't when an osprey flies by or another raptor or bird. So the loons are keeping a sharp eye out for eagles, and there's a real risk to the loon that the egg or loon chick especially will become the prey item for an eagle that's in the neighborhood.
So loons have a special call that says, "Hey, look out for the eagle."
It's the general call that any loon makes when they're alarmed. So if it's a male loon, you might hear the yodel call, sort of an angry seagull sound. Or for both sexes, male or female adult loon, you might hear the crazy laugh of the loon, the tremolo. That's just their alarm call, whether they're startled by a boat zooming by, another loon, or the eagle in the distance.
And Dick in Moultonboro, John, sent us an email. He says, how much of a threat are bald eagles to loon chicks? So can you tell us about that, John?
Folks on the lake, as well as Chris, Ian, and birders and field biologists who are out on the lakes monitoring eagles and loons, we all notice lots of eagle harassment where opportunistically, as one of their many adaptations, eagles might dive for a loon chick. And if they're lucky, if the eagle's lucky, they might get the loon chick. But there's a lot more attempts than there are successes with that. So it is a risk for loon chicks. And what we've been interested in over the last couple decades is how much of a real frequency there is to the successes for the eagle of actually getting a chick. At this point, we've actually documented only a handful of cases where we've been able to confirm that the eagle succeeded in getting the chick. There's probably lots of other times when they came close or when it happened and nobody was there to see it. And at this point, although the eagle population is growing so quickly, it's a changing impact. But at this point, we're only seeing a very modest impact on loon productivity across the state. There's lots of other bigger stressors on loons and,
sure,
and for loon chicks.
Yeah, and as we've talked about on this program many times, shoreland development, motorboats, disturbances, flooding,
raccoons,
climate change, raccoons, lead sinkers. So the loons have a lot on their plate. Donna from Center Ossipee says, we live on Danhole Pond, which has one breeding pair of loons. And Donna says, this past summer, the pair had three babies, but the bald eagle ate two. I saw it catch one. So seems like there is a little bit of a concern there. Is the threat then from eagles just harassment, John, or is it, you know, disturbing nests or just stressing the loons out, or what is the real problem?
What we've been interested in is both the cases where the loon actually predates, where the eagle actually predates an adult loon in the water on a nest. That's really rare because eagles and loons are about the same size, and it's risky for the eagle to take on an adult loon. But it does happen rarely. And then eagles will scare the adult loon off a nest and predate the eggs. That's more common. And they will go after the loon chicks. And all of that predation is mixed in with a really larger dose of harassment or pestering loons on the water. So it's not uncommon to see eagles dive bombing loons on the lake, adults and chicks, and most of the time they're not successful in actually getting a hold of the loon chick, but they do, and it's becoming an increasingly common thing for them to actually succeed in that. So the anecdote from Danhole Pond is one of, you know, we hear stories like that increasingly from around the state.
John, hold on. I think Chris Martin wants to
jump
in.
Laura, if I could. John, it's good to talk to you.
Hi, Chris.
Hi. John and I have worked a lot on trying to understand the relationship between eagles and loons over the past 10 years. We find ourselves in the same places, looking at the same lakes, and trying to understand this relationship. I think we need to step back and think about this in the larger context. And that is that bald eagles and common loons have been inhabiting the same habitat for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And loons are innately adapted to cope with threats that are around them if they've had time to evolve understanding those threats. And certainly bald eagles is an example of that. And that's why you hear loons sending this alarm up and down the lake to the other pair saying, there's an eagle here, it's flying over me right now, watch out. Happens all the time. And so one thing about natural selection is that animals that have effective strategies for coping with threats are the ones that survive and reproduce. And so obviously I'm biased on this, but eagles are actually performing a service to the loon population in the sense that they are making them smarter and more wary. And you have to keep in mind that for the last 40 years or so, loons have not had to deal with this predator that for all of time before that it was part of their normal environment.
That's really interesting. And it does seem, John, that we talked earlier about one of the reasons for the rebound of the eagles, there are several, but is that they are so adaptable. And Ian talked about that, you know, they'll kind of eat anything. And, you know, as long as their chicks aren't threatened or their eggs aren't threatened by DDT, you know, they'll kind of nest anywhere. It almost seems, John, please correct me if I'm wrong, that loons are kind of adapting more slowly, or that they're more vulnerable, or that they're not as adaptable as eagles. Maybe it has to do with the fact that they nest on the water and there's a lot more disturbances there. I just wonder what you think, John.
Yeah, the recovery of the common loon population in New Hampshire has been much slower and is still ongoing and is affected by a lot of stressors that eagles are immune to because, for one thing, the eagles are nesting up in the treetops. And for loons, as you pointed out, Laura, the shoreline development where they nest right on the water's edge and the other stressors and disturbances they're exposed to nesting right on the edge of the lake, it's just a different ball wax for loons. So their population trend or their recovery has been much more incremental, and they've also been the subject of much more intense management, and that's ongoing too, just to keep that that very gradual recovery underway.
Well, we've got lots more emails. I'd love to share a couple more with you before we close out. Deb in Colebrook says, I have spent 40 years paddling the waters of northern New Hampshire. I think the increase in eagles has contributed to a decline in the waterfowl population as I see less of them. Deb asks, am I just imagining this is happening? Deb, it's a great question. Ian?
Well, you know, there are other factors that are causing populations of waterfowl to decline in the state, probably not necessarily linked to eagles, although studies that have been done up in the coastal waters of Maine are showing that there's certainly an impact on eider ducks. Eagles will very easily, very happily take eider duck chicks, and eiders have this habit of congregating their chicks in creches, and so that can, it's to try to have, you know, multiple adults protecting those chicks, but sometimes the eagles can harass them enough that they can grab some chicks. We're also seeing impacts on cormorant populations in coastal Maine as well. So, you know, eagles will, they're sort of the new bully in town is sort of what's happening. You know, after, as Chris said, they've had 40 years of not a lot of eagles around, and suddenly they're back. And so a lot of these birds are going to have to adapt. And it's possible that some populations of birds had rebounded or had increased sort of beyond where they should be. There's a lot of interesting dynamics going on with ospreys. Ospreys had really responded really well over the last 40 years, huge population explosion. And that really happened without a lot of bald eagles around. Now the eagles are back. There's a lot of very direct competition between ospreys, both in terms of the kleptoparasitism that Chris mentioned of ospreys being harassed by eagles. Eagles are taking over osprey nests and even predating chicks in nests. So we're seeing direct competition between those two species. So everything's kind of sorting itself out now that eagles are back in town.
You know, John, I have to ask you one more thing. Just recently, I understand you had the case of a loon directly being attacked by an eagle. The loon was especially vulnerable in this situation. Can you just briefly tell us that story, John?
We see, as Ian mentioned, eagles are out in the wintertime, and as the recent winter eagle count showed, they're out in number in New Hampshire, and we see a few loons that end up in New Hampshire longer than they should be. This time of year, they should be down on the coast, and a few handful don't migrate when they should and end up getting stranded without enough of a water runway to take off. So if a loon in that situation, as we had down in near Keene a few weeks ago, is vulnerable to the eagle that might happen to be around because the loon is limited to just a little bit of open water as the ice comes in. And so that's easy pickings for the eagle, and without a rescue from humans, that the loon is doomed one way or the other.
So you got this loon out of the ice, and then what?
Yeah, if we are aware of that situation, we'll try and get out there on the ice with a big landing net and scoop the loon up and get it to the coast where it should be.
Don't try this at home.
Yeah, right.
If it's got a clean bill of health, you know,
Call
the first
the
thing to do is to X-ray the loon and test the loon's blood for lead, since that's a common problem. But in that case down near Keene on Spofford Lake, the juvenile loon was pretty healthy, and so the next day we let it go on the coast, and that's where it wanted to be.
Well, John, it's good to talk to you. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Laura.
That's John Cooley, senior biologist with the Loon Preservation Committee. Lots more questions that we will not have time to go through, guys. But here's one from Cindy. I wonder about West Nile virus in eagles. As I understand it, while West Nile usually kills crows and ravens, raptors like hawks and owls suffer. Is this a problem we see with bald eagles too? Do either of you guys know?
I don't have a lot of factual information on this. I don't think that West Nile is a key driver in our eagle population right now. We're much more worried about some of the contaminants that are out there as opposed to disease, things like mercury and lead, lead sinkers, which obviously folks at Loon Committee have also been concerned about. Lead in ammunition that kills deer, that remains in the body and is consumed by eagles. Those are crucially important things to watch out for. Any kind of improper disposal of euthanized animals, that that chemical that's used for, to kill them may be in their body when an eagle feeds on it.
So eagles aren't completely off scot-free. There's
no,
still some,
they have risks,
some threats. Absolutely. Okay, thank you for that question. It's something that I was wondering about, too. Robin Nashua asks, is there some sort of online list of GPS coordinates where a hiker might find bald eagles' nests or golden eagles? Rob says, in nature. What do you think about this, Ian? Both the practical question, but also the idea that people love to see these eagles, but you don't want to get too close. You don't want to disturb them.
Yeah, I mean, we try not to advertise the nests too much. I mean, they are fairly obvious, and a lot of people who live on a lake will know that there's a pair of bald eagles nesting on their lake. We would sort of, I certainly wouldn't advertise widely a particular nest site because they could be overly disturbed. People can get a little too close, and they could get spooked, although they're very remarkably tolerant. But I don't know what you think about that,
yeah,
Chris.
It's
we keep,
yeah,
we keep the nest fairly quiet just because it's sort of a need to know. Why would you share that information? But people will find them by themselves. You know, people are out and about and they're good observers and they're in eagle habitat. It's not hard to find a nest.
That's part of the fun.
Sure. Yes. Well, we talked earlier about how eagles have adapted pretty well alongside humans, again, in that busy Merrimack River corridor, but maybe not to the point where you should go out and, you know, do a selfie next to the nest.
Yeah, we don't want people harassing them. They certainly, you know, people can push the envelope a little much, and they will reach a breaking point where they could be disturbed at a critical time. If it's raining, the chicks get chilled or something like that. But so people, you know, people need to be keep their distance and not get too close that they're going to scare the birds off.
Okay, well, I'm glad that question came up. Both of you, we could have talked a lot longer. Thank you so much for being here. Ian, it was great to see you.
Good to see you, Laura. Thank you.
Ian McLeod, Executive Director at the Squam Lakes Natural Science Center. Chris Martin, thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure.
Chris Martin, Senior Biologist at New Hampshire Audubon and co-host of Something Wild here on NHPR. And this is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.